Welcome everyone to our second session on disability inclusion and embrace with Becky Boyer, with Westminster's Director of Youth Ministry. Last week was a great session and we look forward to this, and it tees up another pair of seminars that will start next week, and they are kind of challenging. Topic is One Body, Many Parts, Engaging Difference in Congregations. Now, interestingly, the sermon today kind of sets this up. So make sure you listen or catch it online. And I think Leanna Fuller from the seminary will guide us through the best way to kind of navigate the difficult waters of life today, both in church and even outside. I'm sure she'll just be wonderful. So please plan to come and tell your friends. And if you can't make it, you can watch, do Zoom. So I think we've had a good January. Oh, thank you for mentioning. Next week, it's at 8:45 because we're having the 10 o'clock service. And the good news is that we'll have coffee and some sweets for you. So when you come, you don't have to worry about that. Just get out of bed, come, and we'll give you the caffeine you need to get through. And now Becky will open with prayer.
I'm going to pray for caffeine to get me through. Let us pray. Dear Lord, who gives us all of the seasons of our lives and seasons of fall, winter, spring, and summer. Yeah, that's one. Lord, we are cold this morning, and we are just yearning for warmth. Lord, help us that we can gather together today to praise you, to show our love for you, and to be a community, a beloved community in your eyes. In Jesus' name, amen. I don't know how many of you, well, most of you were here. No, actually, it's a different crowd. It's a different crowd than last week. As I said last week, I do not have any visual disabilities. I, you know, have minor things, you know, like ADHD. That's not actually medicated. So, but I have worked with a lot of varying disabilities through my years, and that I feel like I can talk to the congregation about what it's like, and what, you know, I can't say exactly what it feels like to be disabled, but we are all going to be disabled at some point in our life because we're born needing people to take care of us. And when we die, most of us are going to need somebody to take care of us. And at various points in our lives, we have things that happen to us, whether it be you fall and you hurt yourself, or you break a bone. You know, there's all kinds of things that happen to us that, you know, cause us to be disabled. But there's people that are born disabled. There's people that become disabled. And, you know, it just varies. It's a really large spectrum. Last week, I talked about how it's perceived in the Bible, and how it is not a sin that some people try to tell some people with disability that we're going to pray this away. We're going to talk about this in a little bit, but it's complicated. Even in the Bible, there are things that you read and it's kind of like, well, what does that mean? And then at other places that it's like, oh, you know, he used a person that has a disability purposely. So like Moses, for instance, he didn't cure Moses. He could have, but he decided to use Moses along with Aaron. There's a reason. We don't know exactly what it was, but you know, there's a reason. So let's start off with, here we go. For many disabled people, the church has been a city on a hill, physically inaccessible and socially inhospitable. Sadly, rather than offering empowerment, the church has often supported the societal structures and attitudes that have treated people with disabilities as objects of pity and paternalism. The primary problem for the church is not how to accommodate disabled people. The problem is a disabling theology that functions or functionally denies inclusion and justice for many of God's children. This was written by Nancy Iceland, who wrote a book called The Disabled God. And it is everything you read about disability goes back and uses her as a resource. And she's just a wonderful person, and she is disabled. And she has a doctorate, and she's just her mind is just wonderful. So we talked a little bit about last week, we talked about problems of interpretation and that how scripture is read in a way that, you know, doesn't really help much. Scripture that combines disability with impurity, for instance, like in Leviticus, the holiness codes, and people with a disability would be banished because they were unclean or something was wrong with them. You know, that's one interpretation that people have from the Bible. The New Testament stories also are puzzling because they were going off of Leviticus, you know, and they were like, well, who sinned that caused this disability? Was it the parents? Was it the person? You know, who sinned way back in, you know, grandma, you know, who sinned that caused this? And oftentimes there were things that were misunderstood, such as epilepsy, seizure disorder, autism. They probably had it back then too. And mental illness, those were all seen as demonic, but they were not demonic. They were neurological. They just didn't know. So Jesus came and he said, you know, in Luke, I think it's Luke 24, where he says, no one sinned, you know, because the disciples asked him when he healed someone, he said, who sinned? And he said, no one has sinned to cause this. This, you know, he was just so caring and so loving, and that this is not something that is caused by God, but something that can be used for God, which is what Jesus did, because these people would be healed, and people would notice that person's healed. How did that happen? So there's many different like reasons or lies about disability that you see out there. We talked about this last week a little bit, and that you know, we just need to pray over you and ask God to take it away. My husband was a pastor, and he had a woman come up to him and tell him that he must not be praying the right way or his cancer would be gone. I was standing next to him and I just walked away. I just walked away. And I don't know how my husband had the poise to stand there and take that. It's just the theology that some people have is just really messed up. We need to stop that kind of talk. Or if you tried hard enough, you could just overcome this. My father used to say that to my mother, who couldn't walk. Well, what's wrong with you? You're just not trying. Well, she had a neurological issue. She couldn't walk. And they would fight. She said, I can't. Or you are special in God's eyes, and that's why you were given this painful disability. Well, that just stinks. Or when you get to heaven, you will be made whole. That is an interesting, because we do think about what happens when you get to heaven. Will we be cured of whatever it is we have? What age will we be? What will we look like? I mean, there's a whole lot of thought process about that. And what the people with disabilities, that means that you're changing that person. My daughter with autism, I wouldn't know who she was if she didn't have autism. She would not be herself. And so if she gets to heaven and autism is taken away from her, who is she? Because she has autism, she is so creative. And she's a poet. She can write like nobody, and she's been published all over the place. That's part of it. It's part of who she is. So here's another quote from Nancy Iceland. I didn't. In her book, The Disabled God. Oh, this was the part I was talking about. In Luke 24, Jesus appeared to the disciples following the resurrection and says to them, "Why are you frightened? And why do doubts arise in your heart? Look at my hands and my feet and see that it is I, myself. Touch me and see." She says, this was the resurrected Christ making good on the promise that God would be with us, embodied, and as we are disabled and divine. Jesus Christ, as a living symbol of the disabled God, shares in the human condition. He enters the arena of human limitations, even helplessness. And Jesus' own body is wounded and scarred, disfigured and distorted. We never think about Jesus as being disabled. It's a whole new way of thinking. Disability, as we talked about, can include suffering, blessing, or somewhere in between. In heaven, perhaps we should not expect an end to disability, but maybe an end to pain and limitations around disability. There will be no more pain. I don't, this is a man who I took this out of a book. I don't know who Sam Seaver is, but this is his quote. He says, I don't suffer because of my deafness. I suffer because of the lack of awareness and overt autism on display by hearing society. And no, I wouldn't change who I am. It's an integral part of my identity. And many people with autism are proud of their neurodivergent brains, and others hate it. But when my daughter was in started college at Carlo, there was a professor who wrote a book, and all of the freshmen had to read it. And it was about her son, who had profound autism. And she talked, you know, they had a seminar kind of thing, and she talked about it. And she basically said that she would rather him not have been born. Now, I can understand people that have more profound, children with disabilities. It's got to be really hard, really hard. But even those that have those disabilities, and I've seen them and been with them, there's still something in that little spark. There's a spark in there. And my daughter really took that as an insult, and she was very, very angry, and didn't do too well in that freshman seminar. I'm not sure what her grade was, but she really had a rough time with that. And there's people also that, you know, they're starting to be able to, you know, in pregnancy, to be able to say, oh, well, your child has Down syndrome. Do you want to abort? And more people are choosing that option. But what does that mean for our society? We're just going to not have Down syndrome anymore. But we'd be missing that whole population of people that are just lovely people that have so many abilities, and they're just permanently smiling all the time. And they put a smile on my face. When you see a person that is always smiling, you can't help it but smile back. So, you know, how can we just get rid of a population of people? It's going to be a challenge in the future, because there's going to be more of that. So we're moving on now. So what does it mean for us to be inclusive? Eric Carter is another expert. He is the professor of special education at Vanderbilt, and he has a lot of publications and books and videos and things like that. And he talks about inclusive ministry. And he says, an inclusive ministry is one which enables, empowers, and engages all persons within the worshiping community, regardless of ability. And this stems from a belief that God has created us as equally valued people in his image. Let us create man in our image, in Genesis 1:26. We talked a little bit about that last week. The image of God is best reflected in community. Think about that for a minute. Together, we live out the mandate of Luke 4, 18 to 21, proclaiming the year of Lord's favor to everyone. The image of God is best reflected in community. When we look, when we think about how we're created in God's image, is this what God looks like? Does God look like Bobby? I don't think God looks like us, but we are the ones that are carriers of God through us. It's not about the visual, it's about what's inside. So, okay, so here is what inclusive is not. An inclusive ministry is not a program. It is not about creating a special class or a separate ministry or even identifying the disabled as an object of ministry. That's hard for us. It may be summarized in the motto, ministry by and with people with disabilities, in contrast to ministry for people with disabilities. It's opening the doors of the church to include those with disabilities to fully participate in the life and the body of Christ. Now, I have been a part of many ministries that have a special class or a special, we're going to have worship for people with disabilities. I've started that because it enables them to be able to worship in their own way. But that's not right, is it? Because the community of God is everybody. It's everybody included. So that would be like us saying, okay, I'm sorry, but you're a different color, then you have to go to this room and worship. It's very difficult. But once you get to know someone that has differing abilities, and you see the joy on their face as they worship, then it's all worth it. It's all worth it. I have a short story of when I was not working for a period of time. It was right before COVID hit. My daughter and I were just kind of like, I could go to whatever church I wanted to go to. I was like, well, this is fun. So we went to Southminster one day. But before we went to Southminster, we went to the coffee shop down the road, and we were getting coffee, and we were sitting there and drinking our coffee. And next to us was this gentleman who had papers spread out all over this coffee table, and he was drinking his coffee, and he had headphones on. He was listening to something, and I was just curious. So I started to talk to him. I'm that kind of person, I said, what do you have there? And he told me that he has playlists written out, all these different playlists. And that's what he listens to. It's like, oh, well, that's pretty cool. I mean, I noticed that he had a cross necklace on. And, but I didn't say anything to him. Well, then my daughter and I got up to go to church. It was time. And we were walking out and he's walking out also. And I'm like, are you going to church by any chance? And he's like, yeah, I'm going to that church right over there. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. And so we were walking, but we didn't walk at the same pace. And so my daughter and I passed him up and went in and sat down. And next thing I know, there's a tap on my shoulder. I turn around and it's this young man. And he says, hey, can I sit with you? Because this is my first time here and I don't know anybody. I was like, sure, you know? So we slid down and made room for him. And I couldn't believe it, that this was like his first time there. He was, so during the sermon, people with autism tend to stim and they rock back and forth. That's a stim. My daughter kind of goes circles like this. And he was going like this. And I'm sitting in between the two of them. And I'm getting like, woo. And I just looked up and I said, God, this is where you put me, huh? You know, I have the blessing today of worshiping with these two wonderful people. And we went back a couple of times later and he was still worshiping there. And everybody had gotten a chance to know him, and he went to the coffee hour and he laid all of his stuff out. You know, I hope he's still there. I don't know, and I can't remember his name, but you know, doesn't matter. It was just a wonderful experience to have. This next is a video from Eric Carter.
I got into this in unexpected ways. As a college student going down a business path, I stumbled into some friendships with some young people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Many of these young people were feeling very isolated, disconnected. And that was really where the most powerful form of ministry could happen, was simply getting involved in people's lives. The presence of people with disabilities is becoming more and more prominent. But for the most part, this is just not on the radar of most people. We have some congregations, some businesses, some schools that are really doing a great job and shining, but the vast majority, it's not that they're resistant to doing this, it's that they're just not even aware that this is a deep need in their community. Partly what we're trying to do is help people think about their community, maybe in a much broader way, and realize there's a lot more people out there than you might know about, and that by getting to know them, it might actually benefit you in some way. We start off often with this ministry to people with disabilities because we notice they're often on the peripheries of community life or not involved in some way. But when we do that, and we don't do it where we're kind of at arm's length, but we actually get involved in someone's life, we actually start to see that we have something to gain from that as well. Over and over, I think we're seeing people who say, you know, I started off thinking this was going to be good for them, but I'm learning more about who I am. That notion of who is the giver and receiver get overturned really quickly, and they talk about how their community is stronger. You can't feel like you belong as a member of a group. It's in an individual basis, not just volunteering in a Sunday morning program, but going to have a cup of coffee, inviting someone to a movie, asking someone over to watch the big game or whatever it is. those are the ways you help someone feel like they belong. And what's great about that is none of those gestures require any expertise or training or knowledge about disabilities. A great starting point is to say, what is it that helps me feel like I'm part of this place and I belong? And then do those things with and for another person. The end goal is helping more people realize firsthand what they've been missing out on by defining their community too narrowly. Don't start as your first inclination a new program or a new ministry. Find a person who would love to be part of a community, and you might just be the key to making that happen. Spend some time together, and what you discover in doing that is you probably develop a new friend. I wonder if people with developmental disabilities might be just the people who are calling us to those kinds of relational experiences. And maybe that's exactly what a church needs to remind us about what's most important. Love God and love your neighbor. As I think about this work, the reason I'm so invested in it is because I've seen firsthand in my own life the impact that it can have. I was really a recipient of ministry by people with disabilities, and so I've tried to think about how do I help other people find that position.
So he says, don't start a new ministry for people with disabilities. So that's not our outcome. Our outcome is to include in our community. How many of you know that we have a group that meets here on a weekly basis? You do. On Tuesday, well, no, it used to be Mondays. Now it's Thursdays, I think. They changed their date. The youth cafe and the youth area is filled with people with disabilities that come from their residential homes and come there to watch movies, to play games. Sometimes they play bingo. Sometimes they do crafts. They eat their lunch. And no one's even aware that they're here. There's a lot of things that happen in this building, a lot of ministries that happen in this building that a lot of people don't know about. We're going to talk about more about that in a minute. Come on. Oh,
I.
Nope, there we go. Okay. So, in the late 70s or the mid 70s, supposedly, they started this this program called Everyday Lives. And it's the motto thing, their vision statement is over here on the side. Everyday Lives guides us in our commitment to help create a world that embraces and celebrates human differences. A world in which everyone can experience belonging. And so what they were doing is they were taking people out of the institutional facilities and putting them out into group and residential homes. And they started to call it Everyday Lives. The goal of this was to get them into the community and for them to be part of the community. It says, as we near our 30th anniversary, I think it's more than that right now, but the publication says our goal should be clear. We are seeking nothing less than a life surrounded by the richness and diversity of community, a collective life, a common life, an everyday life, a powerful life that gains its joy from the creativity and connectedness that comes when we join in association as citizens to create an inclusive world. I have another video to show you here.
You may not realize it, but I have hidden talents.
I have a gift you need.
I have good ideas.
I have...
Without me, you are missing out.
I have a lot to say.
I have a lot to contribute.
Lots to offer.
I have a lot to teach you.
Because I'm gifted.
Yes, we bring.
We got community. Later.
I discovered this Keras organization online just recently, and they have so many resources and so many great ideas that it's really something that I'm looking forward to using. But we talked about the idea of this whole seminar was who's missing from the table, and the parable of the great banquet and how the king or ruler said, go out and, you know, invite my friends, but the friends didn't come, supposed friends. And so the ruler said, well, go out and invite anybody on the street. And they did, and they came. And they said, there's still room for more. So who are we in that parable? It's hard, isn't it? So the second question about what groups meet at the church, and I talked about the group that meets here every week, and they also do other activities as well. The Social Justice League took part in a bingo night with them. They're having a line dancing program coming up that I want to get you guys in. I think that would be fun. But that's how you get to know people, and you get to say, hey, did you come to church? I think they would like that. So it's not just that group. We also have many other support groups that meet here. You know, AA, NA. I can't even tell you how many other groups we have that meet here. And no one knows that they meet here unless you're part of that group. This congregation opens its doors to everybody, but they're all in their own space. So why don't we see them on Sunday mornings? Yes.
Becky, thank you very much for this two-part series. I wish it were a little bit longer, but I appreciate you bringing this forward to us. That first question has me thinking about something I've heard, the difference between diversity and inclusion. Throughout this slide presentation, those two words continue to appear. So it reminds me of some definition of diversity is inviting someone to the dance. Inclusion is asking them to dance.
Yes.
And so just you know, inviting people to the church isn't, that's diversity.
Right.
We're bringing in different groups, but I think you're challenging us to invite them to dance.
Yes.
How do we really integrate them into our culture? And it's a two-way street. It's not that we're, you know, doing something. And sometimes it's very subtle. I will just share, last week I served communion, and you know how we go up and down the aisles with our trays and we reach over across to someone. And I noticed that after I served bread, the person I was serving had some mobility issues. And I thought, I got to do something about that. You know, how can I make it easier for them to take the cup? And I simply stood in the pew in front of me and handed it straight out so they didn't have to twist and turn. It's simple stuff.
It's simple stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
You said what I was going to say essentially very well. Thank you. Yeah. I want to just do two things. I had the privilege of working with Nancy Easland when I was at Emory.
Did you really?
Yes. And as one who was also born with a disability, she and I had several really great conversations. So I want to just make sure that in understanding Nancy's work, because one of the reasons I really admire her is that she was one of the very first to really challenge the church to take a look and be more integrated as opposed to programmatic about the disabled. And as one with a serious disability, she came to that with a real theological understanding about it. In fact, but I will also say, and this is the one of the points I wanted to make, I don't think Nancy would affirm a theological perspective where disabled people were expected to feel, quote unquote, blessed. It sort of smacks of feel good about it. And it comes with that freight word of should. I think what she would say is that people are going to respond and react to their challenges in their own unique ways.
Yes.
And that's what we should really affirm.
Yes.
But I also think, to come back from what you were saying, I think Nancy would suggest that the church might have some of the disabled people or those with challenges ushering, you know, in the choir, places where they know they can really get in and out of the church easily and so forth. But it's asking them to dance rather than having a program of dance. So I, you know, and I really thank you for bringing this up and doing this seminar, is bringing it to our attention.
Wow. I'd like to talk with you later on about Nancy. I think that'd be great. Oh, Bobby has.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I know you work with the young people a lot, and I know, I mean, it's been a while since I was a young person, but I remember how, being a young person, it was really important for me to do everything exactly like my friends did. I had to dress like my friends and act like my friends and speak like my friends.
Right.
And all of those. And whenever people are disabled, that they don't fit into that. And I wonder how the young people that you have here react to that. Is that a challenge, or is that something they grow into, or do you nudge them?
Maybe Nolan could answer that question.
Well, that's right. I see Nolan.
Hello, I am a young person currently and actively. One of the most difficult parts of school for everyone is obviously going to be feeling included by their peers, because it's scary. High school, but that is a lot more difficult. I wouldn't know, for people with disabilities. I wouldn't know much about that, but I can see it in my school. And something at least I always try to do is like talk to them, because a lot of people don't. It's really interesting. A lot of people throughout, you know, my high school would acknowledge them as something separate from them, see them as someone different, which on one hand, yes, they see the world and they think very differently, but they are also humans, high schoolers experiencing high school, obviously. And so, and I'm sure that's the same way in the workplace. So it's like important to have a conversation with them in whatever way you can communicate, because every good relationship is built on communication. And it's very interesting. It's very interesting how, unfortunately and sadly, a lot of the school sees them as different, like in a way that would be totally almost unacceptable to like talk to them. It's very sad, actually.
Do you mind a comment from the peanut gallery?
Yeah. Come on, peanut.
Aren't we all different?
Yes.
And yet, our differences, depending on the society and the culture, has a tendency initially either to exclude or include. So what is our bias? Is our bias toward inclusiveness, or is that even, as a word, kind of a strange thing that says we have to be different than we are? I'm wondering, just on a very simple level, the level of integration or not between the church and each of these groups. I remember many years ago, AA used to meet in what was called the old parlor. Session used to meet down there too. It's that room 131 underneath the old choir room, which is 231. They met on, I believe, Friday nights. One reason being that nobody else was around the church on a Friday night. But the point would be, are there people who can bridge between AA or any of the other groups so that they feel welcome and so they are invited, literally, to join in? What kind of a liaison do we have? And it seems to me that, Becky, you're throwing that challenge down that says we need liaisons, not with some kind of a marking on them or, but we need somebody to do that and just step in and make that happen. And sometimes confidentiality in the case of AA was a major problem, but I suspect we probably had some real live church members who were part of that group.
Hopefully.
I know we have several physically challenged people who are members of our church. I wonder if they attend the meeting you were talking about. I don't know.
No.
So that to me would be a first step, just to invite them to the dance.
Thank you. That's certainly something that we need to consider, because some of those groups are definitely closed groups for a reason. So we can't like just go in there and say, hey, but I think that you all have been here a lot longer than I have. So maybe if you know somebody, that might be a possibility.
Well, I wonder if there literally is a connection of any kind at this point between the church, anywhere in the church, and the so-called leader of that group. I don't know if we know if there is an institutional connection between this group and some entity that that oversees it.
Someone on staff has contacts with
yeah.
them.
I think so.
So, but I don't know for sure. We have a question back here.
Yeah, I think the word confidentiality is an important one. And I don't know that, I mean, the fact for me that we are opening the door
right.
and allowing them to come in a safe space is a really good thing. And maybe that's all that we're being asked to do. You know, they walk through the halls and might see when we are offering other programs, or when the church services are, so that information could be made available. But I think in those, all of the A's, NA's, AA, Al-Anon, those are just really a sacred space,
right?
That
right.
we've just opened yeah. our doors for,
right? Right.
And that I would suggest that perhaps then we need to find an innovative way to open those communications. It could be as simple as a note on the door that says, hey, we really want to connect in some way. Do you have a way?
Oh, I wanted to point out one other thing. The picture that you see up here is a picture of a dance that the community that comes here and uses the facility. They use every facility they can use, but this is one of their dances, and they sometimes use like the Bridgeville Fire Hall and things, and it is packed with people. So they're out there. Do we see them?
As you talk, you give me lots of things to think about, and a number of words just keep running through my head that are problematic. Identity. For all of us, identity is important. And some people look at a disability and say, that's part of my identity. Yes. Don't tiptoe around it. This is who I am.
Exactly.
And other people look at a disability and curse it and say, don't define me by my disability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's challenging because we, especially in a church, we like to think of what constitutes right thinking. What is the correct way to think about this? And there's not one correct way to think about it. But then that brings to another word, which is respect. And maybe that's the correct way to think about it, which is meeting people where they are and respecting people. And that brings us to a third word, which is grace, which God offers us grace, which I think means that he meets us where we are and accepts us as we are. And then the last thought that keeps running through my head is wholeness and healing. And we talk about that in church and how God helps us with, you know, feel whole and helps us with healing. But what really constitutes whole when we are living a mortal life with all of our warts and imperfections and disabilities? What do we really need to be healed from? And that then kind of comes back to that whole notion of Jesus was resurrected. But was he healed from that crucifixion, or did he still have a hole in his side?
Yeah. Yeah. Those are some very good thoughts. Very good thoughts. We're talking mostly, it seems, about people that have intellectual disabilities. And that's only a portion of people that we need to include. Another prominent disability out there right now is mental illness. And we're just scratching the surface of how to deal with that. There is a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety. I don't know if it was, you know, COVID kind of just brought it out, or the world society, the way it is today, has brought it out. But the young people, I will have to say, are really struggling with anxiety and depression. And that is disabling.
I was just asking, you know, the origin.
Well, I think some of, you know, depression and anxiety can run in the family. I know it certainly runs in my family, but I think it almost runs in everybody's family. Yes.
So not technical, but it's the phone, the cell phone, I think is a huge contributor for young people and adults.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the constant barrage of media coming at you and saying, I mean, I have to be careful with what I watch on TV because if a certain person comes on TV, my daughter gets really anxious and I have to turn it off. She's extremely anxious about the election and what it would mean to her or for her. And I don't know, Nolan, do you have anything to say about? No. Oh, okay. He does. He always has something to say.
So when you talk about anxiety and depression, especially in young people, I think the primary issue comes from originally loneliness, which, as like you mentioned earlier, especially as a young person, a lot of people want to fit in. They want to be like other people. And when they're not doing that perfectly, when someone seems better than them for whatever reason, when society makes you think that this one person is the best and other people have to be like them, that's obviously extremely anxiety inducing. And when you inevitably fail to be someone else, that's depressing. So you feel very naturally when you fail to do these things, like loneliness is a huge thing. And like you said, social media, in my opinion, on cell is
I think your mic went off. There we go.
Found it. Okay. You could say, sorry, where was I? Oh yeah. We talked for a long time about how many negative effects there are of social media, because it shows these people who have catered to make themselves look as best as possible. That's the highlight reel. And it also, social media itself pushes the things on you that you have the biggest reaction to. And if people are continuing to have huge reactions to the news and these horrible things that happen all throughout the world, that's what social media is going to keep showing you. And young people are more aware than ever of what awful things are going out in the world. And even that's scary. You know, like you said, we know more about the election than ever just because the news is always on and right on our phones. We know what's going on. So that in itself is also scary. So I think a lot of that comes from social media and loneliness, and they kind of go hand in hand and create more and more of each other.
What about school stress? Around here, school stress?
Yes, that definitely has an effect on it, because people want to have all A's, especially in Upper St. Clair is like a kind of prestigious community and in areas around this. But people really strive to have those all A's, and when they don't, and their friends do especially, that once again creates that separation that everyone else is better than me. And that once again is very stressful.
Thanks, Noah. So yeah, we're it encompasses so much that I can't cover all this on a two session seminar. But I just want you to think about a couple of things. How would we look as an inclusive community? And what might we need to change or do or add or do differently? You were mentioning about the communion. There's one thing in this church that is inaccessible for anybody that has a disability, like physically disability, and that's the chancel. There's no way of getting a person up into the chancel that has a physical disability. What does that say? So that's just one area that it wouldn't be too hard to fix. Might be a little not so pretty, maybe, I don't know. But that's something that we need to think about. So just, yeah, thoughts, you know, going through your heads. And I'm excited for Leanna Fuller to come next week because she was my teacher in seminary. And she is wonderful. And I think you'll get a lot out of her, Dr. Fuller's message. So that'll be great. Thank you. Thank you for all of your insight. I appreciate it.
Just a little reminder, next week, 8:45, we will have coffee here for you. So please come early or tune in early. We'll also be streaming it online. Thank you.